All right, so we're recording whenever you want to go live.
Okay.
But let me put it on speaker view first. Mm-hmm. So start saying something so that way it gets off my phone, my face. Okay.
Hello, hello, hello. Is it on me? Okay. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Hi, everybody. This is John Snyzen from World Alternative Media. And today we are here with, of course, our great friend, Tim Pichot. And we are going to go into some American news and some interesting things happening over in the United States. So, Tim, why don't you tell people what Donald Trump has just said?
Well, I'm sure, like always, he's always saying a lot of stuff, and it's great to be back. But I'm looking at an article right now where Trump calls on the Fed to cut rates by 1% and urges more quantitative easing. And so this is something where, you know, if we wanted to elect, you know, Hillary Clinton, at least we, you know, probably half the audience is Americans, and probably the other half doesn't even vote, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But we're taking a look at this article right now. And, you know, the fact that Donald Trump wants to cut interest rates by 1%, you know, just goes to show that, you know, if the mark is to, if the measurement of success is, hey, you know, let's do everything we can to keep a bubble going, then I would say, hey, he's doing a pretty good job at doing so. But if you want to ultimately fix the systemic problems, it's not about getting conservatives in there. It's not about getting the right people in there. It's about ending this. And so I think that, you know, if there's one thing that has disappointed me more than anything else by Donald Trump, it would be, you know, this whole notion of, you know, hey, we can just string things along to the next election, because it's always about the next election. It's always the next election is the most important. We've been hearing that, you know, for our lives. And I'm sure we're going to hear about this in 2020. And so let me just pull up the article again. And I don't know if you've got any commentary on this or if you happen to see this article as well.
I don't see the article, but I do know that Donald Trump, of course, just mentioned that they should slam interest rates down 1% and then do quantitative easing. Well, again, you know, what did we see back in 2008? We saw QE1, we saw QE2, QE3. It's kind of like hidden. There's no QE right now from the Fed and the banks right now. But what is happening is we have a massive deficit in the United States, about $1 trillion plus. And that is very similar to a quantitative easing. Actually, that's the U.S. government printing money by going into deficit spending. So there's a lot of money that is being, you know, printed still, that we don't have this like easing of monetary policy where they buy the bonds, of course, of either what they do in the United States. They buy government bonds or they buy corporate bonds at the ECB. Now, what I found so interesting is that, of course, Donald Trump was the guy that was pointing out all the different problems with the Federal Reserve, with the markets and everything. And now he is one of the biggest advocates for, you know, keeping the markets up. So I just found it really interesting how he has done like a complete 360 on his thoughts that he had during the election. But of course, he is kind of turned into a politician now where, you got to do the total opposite of what you told people, right, Tim?
Yeah. And, you know, here he is saying, you know, tweeting out, this was, I guess, yesterday, China is adding great stimulus to the economy while at the same time keeping interest rates low. Our Federal Reserve has incessantly lifted interest rates, even though inflation is very low, and instituted a very big dose of quantitative tightening. We have the potential to go up like a rocket. Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe like the you know, if we did some lowering of rates, like 1 point and some quantitative easing, yes, we are doing very well at 3.2% GDP, but with our wonderfully low inflation, we could be setting major records and at the same time make our national debt start to look small. So, you know, interesting strategy to start making the debt small. You got to first balloon it. And there's probably a lot of dovetails. And one we were sort of, as in the pre-interview that we were doing today, one thing we didn't mention actually was out of, you know, there's been so much news going on, but one of the things that we didn't mention actually was this 3.2% GDP. And so when I hear 3.2, I'm like, what are you kidding me? I mean, it was just, you know, what was like a month and a half ago, the Atlanta Fed said it was going to be 0.1, and then I think it was moved up to 0.4. Then it got moved up to like 1.2, and then all the analysts were expecting, I don't know the exact number in front of me, it was like they're expecting like 2.2, and then all of a sudden we get 3.2, and like, you know, that didn't, I mean, I don't think there was anybody calling for that. And so it always makes me wonder what was really behind the numbers, because you can do things to game the numbers. And for people that don't know, I'm a certified financial planner. You know, initially came from like my entire family are basically accountants. I had a guy teach me economics and statistics who studied directly underneath Dr. Gallup of like the Gallup polls. So, you know, day one, they're teaching us, you know, all the different tips and tricks that they use to help game some of these numbers. And so I'm just sort of thinking, okay, well, if, you know, the goal was to have a really impressive number, what are some things that you could do? Or maybe what are some of the other underlying factors? And it looked like that there's a big buildup in inventories. And so when there was the threat of having, you know, all these tariffs, what could have happened is the companies were like, well, hey, if I have to pay 10, 20, 30% more for all this stuff January 1st, and even though a lot of those tariffs probably didn't even come to fruition, I'd rather just go buy everything now, get the tax write-off, get the 10, 20, 30% lower goods, build up the inventories. And so, yeah, you temporarily made things look good, but Obama made things look good too when he had this 5.1% GDP number where it was all sorts of crap where they pulled things from the future to make it look good. And the one thing that I think everybody's missing the mark on is the fact that, you know, especially as a financial planner, you know, if somebody made $100,000 one year and the next year they made $103,200, yeah, their GDP went up 3.2%. But if they went from spending $100,000 to $177,000, I would say, well, you know, it's really great that your, you know, GDP, that your income went up by 3.2%, but your spending went up 77%. I would say that's a pretty big problem. And then as a businessman, I would say that's not a good allocation of resources to spend 3.2% when your deficit goes up 77%, which is roughly the amount that it has gone up the past 5 months. And so I'm not sure if you've got any comments on that or if we want to skip on to the next article here.
Well, I think with GDP too, you got to look at like what kind of GDP are we looking at? Is it all the sick people in the United States that are, you know, in the health sector? That's GDP. Is that a healthy way to have GDP, for example? Is it growth, massive growth in debt, you know, creation through the banking system and then pushing up asset values? That's not necessarily a very good GDP growth. The thing with GDP is they got to, you know, have GDP growth for whatever it takes, because if they don't get growth, they're going to have deflation, and deflation is devastating to a fiat currency and a fractional reserve banking system, because you can't create more debt when you get deflation, and debt becomes more and more expensive and the whole system will collapse on itself. So that's why, of course, they constantly need to push for GDP. Now, of course, China, of all people, they know how to, you know, really play the GDP game. They created freaking ghost cities that, you know, grown the GDP at some points at 10%, but it's not, nobody really living there. They have a plan to move people there eventually, but is it ever going to happen, right? That is the question. So what are you actually, like, what kind of GDP are you putting out there and creating, and is it sustainable, you know, for the economy?
Yeah, I mean, if you, you know, start, you know, great, I'm spending more money on gas this week than I did a month ago. That's great for the GDP. Is that really great for the economy? Or, you know, if, you know, now my kids, if we decide to put them in school, that now we've got to spend another $5,000 more this year than we did last year. Is that good for the GDP? Or, you know, in 2011, when I was spending $70 a month for health insurance, and now I'm spending $1,100 a month and I have a deductible that is significantly higher than it was before. Oh, another great boost to the GDP. Like, so glad that I'm spending more in healthcare, right, on gas, on everything else, you know, every other facet of life. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole that we can go down. If you guys want to know more on this, you go to howitsrigged.com. I wrote an 18-page free ebook on this. And another good website to help decipher all this data would be shadowstats.com. And I'd love to have sometime have a three-way conversation with you and John Williams, have be the tour de force of the Johns on here of shadowstats.com, because I think that would be a fascinating conversation. But one article now that I want to direct you guys to, and I feel bad having, you know, sharing, here we go, three CNBC articles in a row. That's what I like to call CNBC. But there was a FOMC, a Federal Open Market Committee meeting that I think just wrapped up just not too long ago. And everyone's saying that the big news out of this is that Jerome Powell is saying that inflation wasn't persistent, but it's transitory. AKA, they think that the low inflation might change at some point, which, you know, what a great revelation that they're making, that, you know, at some point inflation will not always be low. But it looks like some of the other big, takeaways from this is that the Federal Reserve is not considering a cut at this point, which then sort of, I guess, leads into the next article over here, where it talks about that basically they think that central banks have manipulated the markets enough that there might not ever be any more recessions ever again. And technically, by the definition of how they rig this data, so to speak, that John was just touching base on, that technically could be true, that if you just have a government that says, because the definition of recession is a two negative quarters of GDP. Well, if you just print a, S load of money and, use it to go bomb people, or maybe we can go start another war in Venezuela if we don't get our way, kicking out Maduro, you could rig it so that way you technically aren't in a recession, even though the average person's standard of living is going down. And so as I, saw this article yesterday, I had some mixed reactions to it. But then as I started going down and actually reading the body of the article, they go on to say that, I don't see a world in which we have any form of meaningful contraction, nor any form of meaningful expansion, he told CNBC's Scott Webner during a recent interview. And also goes on to say, central banks have lost all intestinal fortitude to actually put a country through a recession, because it's actually regenerative and useful, he said. Even if they had the wherewithal to do it, the political infrastructure will just completely absorb that intent. So we are probably not, save off something crazy, going to see massive, massive negative growth, except in countries that are so fundamentally crippled that they tipped over. And also goes on to say, so the reality is we're going to grow low single digits every year, which means there's no growth anywhere else, which means you're better off buying equities, and you're better off buying equities are substantially ones that are blah, 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 blah. And, and to some extent, sort of my investment thesis has been, well, there is a chance, not a chance. I mean, what the path is going to be is that there's no way to pay Social Security, no way to pay Medicare, no way to pay pensions, all stuff that you and Josh have gone over 9 million times before. But because of this, what's going to happen is that we're going to have to, all central banks are going to have to print tons and tons of money, and that tons of money could send the stock market through the roof. My guess is that it would send the market down initially first. And so the people that need to really worry about this are people who are close to needing their money. Cause if you're like John and I, and you're a ways off from retirement, doesn't really matter. If things go down right now, it would be more beneficial to make money throughout all of this. That probably gets into a whole nother discussion of cryptos and gold and precious metals and, lots of different ways that we can go on with this. But what do you think about, the statement that central banks have eliminated the risk for recessions in the future?
Well, it's kind of humorous. I think they've become stand-up comedians over there at the Federal Reserve. I think they just...
the jokes on us.
Yeah, the jokes on us for sure. No, it's interesting. If you look at the history of central banking throughout the decade, and those centuries upon centuries that they had some form of central banking, this always goes bad. It doesn't matter what kind of taste of flavor the monetary policy has to it, what they do with the economy to manipulate it. When you print money, this is just a very simple rule that I'm going to say. When you print money, eventually you will get to a point where people don't have and can afford things anymore. And that's what you see in around the world. I see that in Norway. My mom just got a raise. I think after the inflation on all of the things that, that she actually uses, her rent, her gas, electricity, and so on. There were only a very limited amount of money left, and she wasn't actually almost better off at all. She was almost in the negative. So that just tells us that there is an issue when you print all this money. Eventually, it's going to also trickle into the economy when people need to exit out of some of these investments and get some of the money out and start spending it, because people will eventually do that. You can't just manipulate up a stock market and think that nobody's going to take any profits of that market. And then when that happens, that will come out into the economy and into the real economy, and you will start to see a lot of inflation. We see that here in Canada right now, where inflation is ramping up because the real massive real estate price bubble that we had in both Vancouver and Toronto. But what you saw is a lot of people tried to exit out of that, and then of course that money gets taken out in capital gains, and then they start spending it into the economy, and that's how inflation starts to ramp up quite a bit here in Canada, because people are exiting out of those massive bubbles that they created through money printing, through the creation of debt, and that's just a matter of fact here. And I don't think there's too much else to say on that other than we've seen this before throughout history, no matter if it was the French Revolution, wherever it was, in the United States with the Continental, whatever they do, printing money is always a bad idea, no matter what you try to do, or increasing the supply of electronic currency. It's the same thing. So I don't see any betterment here that they're not going to have a recession forever. That's just not going to happen. It's going to come to that point where people just can't afford anymore, like the Yellow Vest movement in France that have now been around for 24 weeks in a row protesting in France while nobody's covering it.
Yeah, it's amazing that the only people really covering that is Luke Radowski of We Are Chained. Yeah. And there are a few other ones out there. And just another quote that I'm seeing here from the article that I missed the first time is, "We have completely taken away the toolkit of how normal economies should work when we started QE. I mean, the odds that there's a recession anymore in any Western country of the world is almost next to impossible now, save a complete financial externality that we can't forecast." Yeah, and we all know, the Fed's ability to not forecast. There's so many different dovetails. But yeah, maybe we'll skip the next recession, and we're just going to go straight into the depression. So we're just going to wait from one and go right into the other. And like I was mentioning before, you can technically not be in recession, but everyone could have a bad time. But let's, now kind of move gears into the next article. And this really kind of dovetails into what we just said about not being able to forecast different recessions that are out there. Because one group of people that can never forecast any recessions is the Federal Reserve itself. And so there is a Zero Hedge article talking about how the next epic collapse could be weeks away. So I can't even read over here anymore. They've got me so flustered. And so one good contrarian indicator is almost basically the more positive or bullish these central bank jokers are, probably the worst things are really are getting to. And so I do see a quote here from Jerome Powell, where he said recently, "I don't see a recession in 2019. And when asked if the bull market can go on indefinitely, he said, "Not every business cycle is going to last forever, but no reason to believe this cycle can't go on for quite some time, effectively, indefinitely." And then goes on to say, "We don't see the kind of buildup in risk in the financial markets, let alone the banking system." And then we've got, Janet Yellen, saying that, "Would I say there will never, ever be another financial crisis? Probably that would be going too far, but I do think we're much safer, and I hope that it will not be in our lifetimes, and I don't believe it will be." And then you've got, obviously, Ben Bernanke in 2008, where he famously said, "The Federal Reserve is not forecasting a recession." And later that year, he was talking about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and goes on to say that they were great enterprises that were not in danger of failing. So, obviously, I think everyone here at WAM who's listening is going to be on the same page when it comes to that. And so I do want to shift gears now, so that way we keep this under 20 minutes, to an article that you had sent over about how the Federal Reserve is going to own the next crash. And so let me get that pulled up here on the screen. And not sure if that's an article that you happened to read yet, but absolutely. I mean, I think the Federal Reserve is going to own the next crash. And anything you want to comment on this article before we move on?
Well, I think we can extend on that and say that the Fed will not only own the crash happening, but they will own all the assets, because they're going to panic buy literally every asset. Look at Japan, right, where 86.11% of all the ETFs are bought by the central bank. I think that's what we're coming up against here, as they're panicking when asset prices will start to suffer here. I think that's definitely what's going to happen, Tim.
And that is actual fascism. So when you have a central bank that can go and print money out of thin air and then buy up assets, that is the state and corporate merger. and which is actual fascism. And this is something I've been talking about for a long time. And so it's, you know, ridiculous how, you know, the left wants to, you know, the fake left, you know, I like to call them, you know, point out all these different boogeymen and all these different fascists that are out there, but then they never point out the actual fascism that is going on, never point out the actual fascists within their own parties. And, you know, another article I want to shift gears to is a Zero Hedge article where it's talking about Trader warns one group will be spectacularly wrong. And what this is basically going on to say is that you've got the, you know, smart money and then the so-called dumb money. And the dumb money is piling into equities like never before, or I guess, you know, like basically all the other times are before a crash or the other times that they piled in this much. And whereas the, you know, the hedge fund community, we're taking a look at a graph right now, basically the hedge fund community is, you know, taking risk off the table right now, you know, aren't super bullish about where things are going. And I'm going to read a quote here, a tweet here, and it goes, "This goes perfectly with what I'm seeing. Retail is most bullish I've seen in my career. I don't care what fund flow data says. Retail is euphoric. They feel bulletproof." And so, you know, usually, you know, the sheeple, if you will, are always going to be doing the absolute wrong thing at the absolute wrong time. And I think this is another case of that occurring, John.
Oh, of course it is, Tim. And what you're seeing is what happened in 2008 and in 2000 is that everybody is running into US dollars for safety. That's what you're seeing. Unfortunately, US dollar is not that safe anymore. It really, in 1971 was when it all started, but it's just becoming more and more devalued. The thing is, everybody else is devaluing their currency at the same time. So we're going to see a crisis here that is of epic proportions. The reason why is because of that we've, you know, implemented its fiat currency system on a global scale. Every single country on planet Earth has this type of system that they run and print money out of thin air. So we're going to see some serious problems. And for people that believe that the, I know economists like Martin Armstrong is saying that the US dollar is going to win and is stronger than anything on the planet. I don't believe that. Like if you ever studied, I know he studied monetary history, but my question is, when you study monetary history, all these currencies that were empire currencies, they live and die by money printing. And the United States have printed way too much money. And to believe that the United States dollar will actually gain its strength back again, I don't see that happening, Tim.
Well, the one thing is, you know, getting into people doing always doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, you know, what might happen is that temporarily it gets really strong because people are temporarily, they're going to put their money into safe U.S. assets, and then those safe U.S. assets are going to be inflated away. But, you know, whether or not we go down last or whether or not we go down in the middle or first, I mean, probably not going to be first, you know, I don't think it ultimately matters on a long enough time horizon. You know, we pulled a lot of articles from Zero Hedge and, you know, on a long enough time horizon, everything goes down to back down to zero. And, you know, one thing you did mention is, you know, with the central bank owning assets, you know, that this time with the next crash, you're going to own everything. And we did have, you know, this was foreseen back in the, you know, days of the, you know, founding fathers of the US when, you know, what was it? Jefferson that said, if we ever allow central banks to issue the currency and credit of a nation, that we're going to end up homeless on the continent or forefathers conquer. Because, you know, if you give the central banks the ability to print money, that they're going to end up owning everything. And that's exactly what we're seeing. And you see the left is like, oh, we're going to be able to fund our Green New Deal just by having the Federal Reserve print a bunch of money. You know, I'm Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and I have a minor in economics. So therefore I'm God and I know everything. And I'm going to centrally plan the rest of your lives. But the last article I did want to touch on, I guess before we get going here, is five companies represent 35% of all the S&P 500's value creation over the last 5 years. And so those, actually it's, looks like six companies, but you've got Amazon coming in at 10.1% of the market's value over the last 5 years, Apple 6.5%, Facebook 4.7%, Google 6.4%. I don't know why they didn't just put that, it must be alphabetical order here. And then Microsoft at 7.8%. And we've got Netflix at 1.8%. So this has not been a broad-based recovery where everything is going up. You know, I don't have the exact stats in front of me in terms of like the Russell 2000 and more broad-based indexes and, you know, percentage of winners and gains. But this is, you know, the instance where you just have a few companies that are, you know, lockstep controlling everything. And those companies don't necessarily have, you know, your best interests at heart. I mean, you think Facebook, you know, is a great, you know, tool for humanity, you know, even though we're on it, or Google. And one thing I do want to just kind of give a quick shout out is I have been recently, and not sure if you guys are aware of this, but there's a, I only own like 7 of these tokens just from the recent searching I've been doing. So it's not like I'm trying to pump some ICO here, but presearch.org is sort of like a Google killer, if you will. And if you want to do a Google search, you can get a Chrome extension, and when you search, you actually be rewarded with these tokens. So I don't know if a lot of people realize that this is a thing that's out there right now, but you know, it's pretty cool. And so what I'll do is I'll share my screen right now so you guys can see how it works. So I just wanted to search Drudge. And so actually, let me put it in my address bar. So I'll just search Drudge right here. And then you see, boop, we got a little pre-search. So actually, I'm all the way up to 9.5 tokens. So I think you get a certain amount per day. Just one kind of aside I just want to throw out there that has nothing to do with, you know, this is what we're talking about aside from Google. But we are coming up on 20 minutes, and you know, hopefully we gave you guys, you know, a fire hydrant of information that was covered. But you know, if John, if you want to have some kind of closing words on the last article here.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's what we're seeing is, of course, a lot of these corporations in the United States, there's a lot of what we call zombie corporations, and they use debt to monetize and then increase their dividend payments by doing share buybacks, as an example, where there's no real value creation. And you're seeing less and less of actual value creation for people now, where there's just more and more of trying to figure out ways of taking more and more money out of the economy. How can you make money with money? And that's the thing. That's the system that we live in.
How can you financially engineer this so that way we can, you know, game things to make it look as best as possible for our shareholders?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it's all about. It's about creating that. And they, of course, are taking the words from the Fed here that wants to manipulate this and wants to do this. And of course, they're going to start doing it themselves, the corporations. Now, this is very sad, but just to finish her off here, I just want to say, like, how can you know, protect yourself from these things happening with the system, you know, with the systemic risk that's out there that could, you know, at any time this could pop, because it's all a trust game that we are now trusting in, you know, the word of the president of the United States or the Federal Reserve, that we're going to trust them. How many times do we need to trust them before you know, we get smacked in the face every single time?
I mean, they have 100% track record that ending badly every single time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we need to find other ways. We need to move out of the grid, as I call it, and into ways of transacting outside of the economy. Start, you know, using cryptocurrencies that are, you know, fundamentally sound and decentralized, to then transact outside of the banking system. Of course, this is my opinion. I'm not a financial advisor and as cool as Tim are, but what I do know is that there's ways, and this happened in Cyprus in 2013, where people use crypto to avoid capital controls, and when the banks bailed in and took money from their bank accounts. So, of course, that is another aspect, of course, gold and silver, and then be ready for things that could happen in the economy, where you suddenly have a you know, stalwart in the whole economy, where goods and services stop flowing in the economy, and you need to have, you know, food for your family, and water and so on. It's just very important to have that as a side thing on top of all your investments, that, you know, mitigates your risk of getting hit and stolen from, and protecting your wealth, as Tim says all the time. But last, before I quit here, I just wanted to mention that we have a promo code WAM for the new Anarcho Vegas in 2019 that's coming, which is super exciting. I know Josh is involved in that. And you could also, of course, check out the Red Pill Expo, which we also have our link to down below. And on top of that, we have a partnership with Mike Maloney at goldsilver.com. So check those links below, because they really, really help us. And you know, there's no funding coming from big corporate conglomerates here at World Alternative Media. So we rely on, you know, our followers and viewers to actually help us, you know, succeed and give the truth out to people.
So, and of course, those Soros checks aren't coming as freely as they used to.
No, exactly.
But can I also give a quick plug? So I am a financial advisor for those of you in America. We do have portfolios. You guys can go on my podcast and, you know, kind of audit me for the last 2 years. But basically, if you're close to retirement, we've got these boom bust strategies where, you know, if the market melts up or melts down, people will be basically saved. The purchasing power will be saved either way. And then also we can get into all different alternative investments, whether it's cryptocurrencies. You can get your gold from Mike Maloney at goldsilver.com, put it into an IRA, except you want to talk to me first because, you know, you can't really do it in that order. And, you know, and what I'm, you know what, I'll just, because I'm feeling generous right now, the first two people that get back to me, and I'll, we'll put a link down in the description, I'll waive the setup fees for the crypto IRAs. Usually it's $1,500. So first two people, only two people, we'll get that waived, where you can get actual cryptocurrencies into your account where you hold the private keys, but it's going to be tax deferred or even tax free in the case of a Roth. And so for those of you who are big on crypto or big on precious metals, or maybe you're close to retirement and you don't want anything to do with cryptos, you know, there's pretty much a whole gambit of how we can help people out. And as you help myself grow, we want to then help WAM grow as well. And so, you know, we need all these different alternative methods of financing because, you know, even, you know, big people, I think I saw it right before I came on. I saw Luke Radowski had a message that he had on his Facebook account of, hey guys, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, kind of getting out of this social media, you know, game, YouTube game, because, you know, the YouTube checks aren't coming anymore. And so this is, and I initially was trying to venture into that space until I saw the shadow banning going on. And so a lot of you probably don't even know who I am because the 10 videos I put out, you know, only reach, you know, 0.1% of, or, you know, 1% of people. So, you know, after 100 videos, then maybe, you know, I'll be as cool as John and you guys might know who I am. But thanks for having me. We'll have a lot more reports coming out, especially with Josh. Want to wish him safe travels as he's trying to find Atlantis. And he did find Deutsche Bank the other day. So he did have a nice report from Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, Deutsche Bank is the new Atlantis, Tim.
Wait, it's a picture of a black hole. We didn't have to have that that point.
No, exactly. But anyways, Tim, it's always a pleasure having you on. This is John Snyson and Tim Pichot signing up for World Alternative Media. Find the truth, be the change.